is Firepower, only at band.video. And now, your host, Will Johnson.
Welcome, welcome. Thank you for joining us. My name is Will Johnson. This is Firepower. So, we have the leftist views on humanity in today's world. We're going to talk about that and much more. So, the left is pushing this agenda on humanity that everything that was good is now bad. They have joined up with Satan himself to confuse the youth of today. Their views on America has become so twisted, they find it comfortable to burn the American flag. I understand we have freedoms in our country to burn the American flag. But the reason why the left is burning the American flag is not because of freedoms, but because they want to destroy what is good in America. The left, if they truly, truly cared about America and the people that live inside her borders, they would be fighting day to day, every day, for all of our lives. The big tech companies are on their side. They push this whole thing that they believe the humanity should be. And it's becoming so bad. If we go against their crazy beliefs today, we are subject to being censored or even worse, banned without any means of appeal. After the election of President Trump, the left has become the left has come out of the pig pen with all of the mud that they can carry. They no longer have civil conversations. You can't do it. They don't want to talk. They'd rather fight with every single person that don't agree with them. If they get their way and we have to comply, or if we don't comply, we're likely to be ostracized from society. They're going to remove every single person from out of sight, out of mind. Christianity is going to be at the top of the list. Right now in America, they've targeted more white people than they have. It seemed like they targeted and then the past with black people. And it's growing day after day. There's going to be an uprising come in this country. God forbid anything happens to President Trump. The left, now they'll look the other way when it comes to one of their own doing something wrong. I mean, how many times did Epstein end up in a newsstand and the left looked completely the other way? I mean, how many times does it take for people to die in a Democrat donor's apartment, Ed Buckley, before the left will take a real initiative? Satan is controlling the liberal media. The liberal media is controlling the people who watch them. The Democrats is controlling the media along with Satan. And these elitists are just watching it all unfold. All right, so we have a beautiful show for you tonight. We have special guests in studio with us tonight. So please go over to band.video and click on my picture, and you'll be able to watch the live stream from there. Share that link. Let's head on into the studio. Like I said, we have a very special guest going to be on set with us tonight. Tom Pepper is still in town. He's going to be on set with us, and we're going to have Mr. Owen Shorier himself going to be joining us. So please, share the link with everybody. Send it out. Send it out. Send it out. Band.video. Band.video. Because they're not censoring it. So you need to share it with your family, your friends. Because without your help, we do not exist. You are in this fight with all of us. Engage, engage, engage. Firepowernews.com. My name is Will Johnson, and we have a lively one for you tonight. So join us. Band.video. See you in a minute. We'll be right back.
immersed in the fire of truth. Firepower with Will Johnson.
All right, everyone just saw that insanity. And for those of you that are listening, what it was a whole bunch of people standing in a circle burning the American flag. You know what? Thank you, Tom Pepper, for being here again, and Mr. Owen Shore. This is absolutely an honor to have you here. I mean, I'm truly, 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 truly. When I see videos like that, it runs all through me because that was the flag that made it possible for me to be here today. And they're just taking it for granted. There's no other country in the world where you can disrespect the country and have the freedom to do it. How is that not great?
Well, you know, it's really telling that those people, and I use that term loosely, were communists. They described themselves as communists, burning the American flag and saying humanity first. I mean, no ideology has killed more people than communism in this planet's history. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, not only that, I'm hearing them chant humanity first. And so I'm just a little confused by what they're getting at. Is this a climate change thing? Is just there's no real context there because the United States takes in more refugees than every other country on earth combined. Mm. Mm. If that's not considered humanitarian, I don't know what is. Let's go directly with humanitarian aid, literal funding. The United States gives more humanitarian aid than every other country combined. So I just don't understand this whole America is inhumane with no context and you burn a flag when this country's probably done more humanitarian activism as a country with taxpayer dollars than any other country in world history. You can sit here and point out America's faults. We'll be here to do that as well. But to say humanity first while you burn an American flag, really just there's no truth to that.
Yeah, it runs all through me personally. And to me, it's anti-American. I mean, their reason for doing it is not because you have freedoms. It's because they want to destroy this country. I mean, seriously, that they want to reshape it into their corrupt, nasty, disgusting image. And if you notice in the video, they put a wall around it. They put a wall around it. And if you want to talk about walls, you know, they don't want a wall to protect the people inside the borders. And then you have people that's coming to the country, should not be here, illegally. Yes, illegally. And then they come here and then they kill American citizens. And then you have the left fighting for these people, killing the American people. I mean, it's disgusting. So we have another clip that I want to play for you guys. And check this out. This is with an angel mom and with the big tech and everything. If this happened to one of my children, I don't know what I would do. I think I would come unglued because we already know it's a problem. So let's go to this clip and we'll get their opinion afterwards.
14 car crash caused by an illegal immigrant driving drunk says Facebook is trying to silence her. She received this notice saying, quote, her posts go against community standards on hate speech. This comes months after Twitter censored her posts about the perils of illegal immigration, a cause that she has devoted her life to after her son was killed. Marianne Mendoza joins us live now. Good morning to you, Marianne. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, Aza.
Good You're morning. Welcome. Okay, tell us what happened. What's the latest?
Well, I noticed a couple weeks ago, well, last week, week and a half ago, that there were some notifications that they had removed a couple posts from the beginning of August. And I was reading through the posts thinking this isn't hateful. One of the posts was actually a quote of a Breitbart article with the Breitbart article attached. And I thought, you know, this Breitbart article, I found it on Facebook. So it was kind of surprising to me. And I put it out there, you know, this just isn't right. I sent the information to Facebook. Of course, I never hear back from Twitter or Facebook when I appeal anything that they've done to me. But it's becoming more and more apparent that the magnitude of crimes that illegals are committing in our country and the information that myself and other angel families and organizations are getting out there is not settling well with, you know, the liberal ideas and the pro-illegal, pro-open borders people. But we have to continue feeding this information to our...
So they're happy with bringing illegals to the country. They're willing to even give them free health care. And we have people on the streets. You've been to some of these homeless camps, and I've seen your videos. And they're not even concerned about American citizens right here up under their nose. And they're trying to bring in more people to create a bigger problem with it. We'll say Utah.
Well, you know, it's very telling that is Facebook banning this poor angel mom. That's, of course, somebody who's had a child murdered by an illegal immigrant. And this is typical for Facebook now. This is a new thing that they've been doing. You'll have a news article. It'll be totally fine when 9 out of 10 people post it. Then all of a sudden, somebody they don't like decides to post it, and they get banned for it. I mean, I've been banned and made my way back onto Facebook 6 times, and I'm waiting for number 7 any day now. But this is a new thing that I've noticed, and they're doing it to mainstream articles, Gateway Pundit, News Wars, Breitbart, Fox News. It's happened with Fox News. I had it happen with a People article, believe it or not. And it really just speaks to Facebook's selective enforcement, I think, Will, because if you get I call them the blue hairs, if you get a lower management person with some kind of type of rainbow hairstyle who doesn't like a post, they have the power to take you down. And the only way you can get back up is if you have a contact at Facebook. So I think it really speaks to these big tech companies and their willingness to outright censor people, individuals, not just ideas, but individuals that they find distasteful.
Yeah.
Well, the phrase illegal immigrant seems to be a trigger of the AI and the censorship. That seems to be a common term that people find when they put it out in a tweet or a Facebook post, illegal immigrant. It seems to get a lot of flags or banning. I think that's built into the AI, which I don't understand this because this is a next level war on language, really, when you think about it. I mean, illegal immigration is something that's in the law. It's literally written in our own U.S. code. So what, are you going to ban the U.S. code? Am I allowed to put the U.S. code on Twitter or Facebook? But really, I don't know how much it at least is working with this, but the Democrats don't like that phrase either. They don't like the phrase illegal immigrant. In fact, they don't even use it. They lump in immigrants mm-hmm. with illegal immigrants, which actually is the most anti-immigration thing you could do.
Yeah. To
say that, oh yeah, people who came here legally, followed the law, and are proud citizens are essentially the same people as people who come here illegally, probably maybe necessarily don't even like this country and suck off the system. It's really not fair to immigrants. It's not fair to language. It's not fair to culture. And this is what the Democrats are doing, where they won't even say the word illegal immigrant, or they demonize you and say you're a xenophobe if you do. Again, that's in the books. That's U.S. code. I mean, is the U.S. code racist for saying illegal immigrant? What about, you know, all the other illegal things, like illegal firearm? Are we just going to lump that in with all the other firearms? I guess they'll do that next. So this is kind of like a two issues crossing to me. It's the war on language, where you can't even say illegal immigrant. It's the same thing as an immigrant. No, it's not. And also how that's built into the AI. People are learning this through experience. You say illegal immigrant, it flags the AI and you get removed.
Yeah, I noticed they like to use the language undocumented.
Yes.
They say undocumented. They won't say illegal. You know,
so yeah, I'm sure
immigrants.
If you got pulled over with illegal drugs, just say these are undocumented drugs.
It's undocumented marijuana. It's an undocumented.
Exactly. Yeah, but that's the language they use,
right?
Because it's a play on words. It's just like you said, it's a play on words. It's certain words you can and cannot say on social media today. And they've been successful in getting a lot of people not to say certain words because you're subject to be banned. You know, I mean, they're doing the censorship, but you're subject to be banned if you say the word illegal, because I've had many people tell me that on these social media platforms. I mean, it's very interesting. Okay, so after this break, we're going to play some videos with Ed Buckley, where he had black males in his apartment, and some of them end up dying. And it's like a sex ring, a sex thing they had going on. It's pretty disgusting. So we're going to show you that, and we're going to talk about that much more after this break. We'll be back in a minute. All right, welcome back. Firepowernews.com. But thank you for joining us. We have in-house Tom Peppert and, of course, Owen Schroyer. We were, okay, so right before we went to the break, I said Ed Buckley, and I have to apologize for that. So it's Ed Buck, just to get it correct. So we have a video clip. Let's play this video clip, and then we're going to come back and discuss it. Okay, so this is going to be Ed Buckley, the first clip in the shot. Ed Buck.
Police activity outside the West Hollywood apartment of Democratic donor Ed Buck. Prosecutors say Buck provided meth to a 37-year-old man inside his apartment. That man overdosed but survived. Buck, now charged with battery causing serious injury, administering meth, and maintaining a drug house. District Attorney Jackie Lacey says in a statement, quote, I remain deeply concerned for the safety of people whose life circumstances may make them more vulnerable to criminal predators. With this new evidence, I authorized the filing of criminal charges against Ed Buck. A neighbor witnessed the arrest.
They finally did something and were extremely relieved and grateful for that.
Mr. Buck, we're with Fox 11. Just like to talk to you for one quick moment, give you a chance.
Yes, you do. I don't want to talk to you.
Back in February, Fox 11 investigative reporter Bill Malusian confronted Buck outside his apartment.
Looking to give you a chance to respond. Do you find that to be a coincidence, sir?
Two gay black men, Gamel Moore and Timothy Dean, both found dead within a year and a half of each other. Moore's death ruled an accidental overdose. Only Fox 11 obtained these images showing Moore's body being removed from Buck's apartment as he spoke to first responders. Moore had written in his journal that Buck had given him his first injection of crystal meth.
Black lives, we matter here!
Black lives, we matter here!
We were on hand days after Dean's death when activists called for Buck's arrest. All these months later, they're finally getting their wish.
Prosecutors are recommending bail be set at $4 million if convicted as charged. Buck faces a possible maximum sentence of 5 years and 8 months in state prison.
This is crazy. Ed Buck, I mean, can you imagine if this was a Republican that did this, a white Republican that did this to black males? My God, they would be burning down the street. That apartment complex would probably be on fire right now. But because he's a Democrat, it's like he's getting a pass. This is crazy.
Well, what's interesting is every single time, you know, this has happened twice before, the two men died of an accidental overdose. And then now this individual overdosed but survived. Every single time you do see the more dedicated members of Black Lives Matter, as we saw in that news clip, outside the apartment demanding justice. But it's no Ferguson. And again, just imagine if, say, just to throw out a name, of course, he would never do such a thing. But just imagine if Tucker Carlson were accused of something like this. My God, Antifa almost beat down the man's door. If he did something like this, his whole street would be on fire.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and you don't even have the media barely covering this today. I was monitoring news like I do every day. I barely saw Ed Buck's name even in the news, so it's no surprise you keep saying Buckley. You never heard of the guy. They don't report on him, right? But everybody's heard about Blasey Ford and that whole shenanigan campaign that there was no truth to. So it really does, again, illustrate the double standard in the media. But, I mean, how about this? I mean, Ed Buck is clearly he's obviously addicted to drugs, right? I mean, or I guess not, but it's like nobody even calls him out on that. This guy's out here shooting up meth into people's veins. Like, what is that? How does that not become an issue? How is that not a mainstream story? This top Democrat donor, this friend of all the top Democrats, let alone the fact that he's got two dead men in his apartment, another one that nearly died. I mean, how would that be if there's three? But, you know, this district attorney out there, what was her name? Jackie Lacey, I think it was. You know, I don't think I trust her very much. She waited till the third person to be a victim to bring this guy in. I think that that's just catering to the outrage mobs, which are legitimate. But she should have done something a while ago. She was protecting, by my view, looks like she was protecting Ed Buck.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, look at the governor of Virginia. You look at the lieutenant governor of Virginia. Look at the attorney general of Virginia. I mean, all of them were accused of doing something wrong, but they were protected by the Democrats. And same thing here. So I have another clip for you. Let's go to that clip. This is the second one in the shot list here.
The 911 call came from here. An unidentified black man dead from an apparent overdose found inside the West Hollywood home of prominent Democratic activist Ed Buck. It's the second time a body has been found inside his apartment. Jamel Moore, an escort, OD'd there in 2017. Overnight, protests erupting. Advocates from the gay and black community accusing Buck of using political influence to elude arrest.
It is exceedingly rare to have in an 18-month time span two individuals, two death investigations from the same apartment.
Buck has rubbed shoulders with high-profile Democrats, but made headlines after Moore's death when the coroner found drug paraphernalia in the apartment. Moore's mother blamed Buck.
I just think he needs to be stopped before someone else dies in his apartment.
Buck's attorney says the victim who died here this week had been a friend for 25 years and arrived at the home under the influence.
But tonight, the sheriff's department says the case is under investigation as detectives also revisit the death from 2017. Miguel Almaguer, NBC News, West Hollywood.
You know, I would agree Ed Buck is at fault, but he's not the only one at fault. No one forced those grown men, unless they were kidnapped, but no one forced those grown men to go there and do the drugs in the first place. So that's probably the angle the lawyer. I mean, if I was a lawyer, that's my angle. No one forced him to come. They were not kidnapped, but you said they were tied down, right?
Well, so, I mean, this is the grotesque part of this, and we'll keep it family friendly, but at the same time, this is what this sick guy is allegedly into. So one of the people who he drugged did not die and made it out of there and moved far, far away. And so he goes after homeless young black men, and allegedly he says, I'll pay you $200 for the night. Come do drugs with me in my apartment. It'll be a great time. And so he's going after people who definitely do not have a lot going on. But then apparently, allegedly, you go into his apartment, he ties you down, he surrounds you with mirrors, and then he injects you with vast amounts of drugs. And he does that for 12 hours, and he lets you go in the morning. And according to this person, his last name was Gagnon. It's a French name. And he says that is the depressive energy that Buck, I think I can say, he pleasures himself to it. We'll just put it that way. And this is a quote that was given to media about a year ago after the second death. So, I mean, it's a creepy, creepy, creepy type of situation.
They're demonic. What say you?
Well, you heard the one report. The lady says, you know, how long till this happens again? Well, it did. It did on that district attorney's watch, who's trying to act like the hero now and press charges. No, you let the city down. Some of this weight, I think, even falls on her shoulders. But obviously, this guy was very deranged, very strange. And you notice how he's never the one ODing, right? So that's kind of another telltale sign. Yeah. He's never the one ODing. So there's a lot. But just you saw the door of the guy. He had like a weird decal on the door.
Yeah, with a cloud.
And like the cloud and then like an urchin or something like that. I don't know. So the guy's obviously deranged, strange, and weird. So, of course, promote him right up to the top of the Democrat Party. Have him hanging out with Obama and his friends and funding
Clinton,
the whole thing. Oh, yeah.
Jerry Brown.
Which gives you an eye into who these people are.
Yeah. Monsters. Okay. We're going to come back. And after this, we're going to go to Sheila Jackson, how she was butthurt about the impeachment hearing from the other day. All right. We'll be back in a minute.
So what does the president do? He calls you in to do what everyone else wouldn't do. He called you in to do his dirty work in secret because he knew it was wrong. Well, we will expose the truth. The president cannot hide behind you any longer. And you should be here to be telling the truth,
Lewandowski,
because the truth will set you free and the American people. I yield back.
The time of the gentlelady has expired. The witness may answer the question.
I don't believe there was a question, Congressman.
Very well.
Yes, there was.
Could you repeat the question? I didn't hear it.
I'd be happy to repeat the
question.
Just
a rant.
Can't repeat the question.
I'll be happy to repeat the
question. Gentlelady's time has expired. The gentleman from...
Did you know the attorney general recused?
The gentleman from Ohio, Mr. Chabot, is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Lewandowski, thank you for appearing this afternoon to testify before this committee.
You know what? I think Lewandowski has become one of my heroes. He handled them beautifully. And, you know, they were just so upset because he wouldn't just give them what they wanted. Give us something to impeach President Trump on. Give us something. And she's talking about the American people, the truth will set you free and the American people. Lady, you don't want the truth. and you can't handle the truth.
Answer my question. You didn't ask a question.
It wasn't a question. It was just a rant.
Not a very good rant. I mean, I've heard a lot of rants in my time, but and then I just love the guy. The men of Congress, apparently they have no chutzpah because time.
Well, you're talking about Jerry Nadler. He makes us look bad. He makes all men look bad.
Yeah, well, I
you know, he identifies as a man.
That's right. That's right.
Saw Ted Lieu up there. I think he may have had a couple parties with Ed Buck in his day.
He seems the type. I mean, that could be how Nadler lost the weight. They say that's what happens with methamphetamine. It's great diet.
Could be. Ed Buck was helping him lose weight. Seriously, though, it was amazing. As you were saying, Will, what a nasty woman.
She is. She's a completely nasty woman. She's been there how many years? Has she done anything that's benefited the American people? I mean, it's a question that we all should be asking. Why are they spending time trying to figure out how they can take out a president, an absolutely decent president that has been doing positive things for the American people? And, you know, for me, that's what it is. Here it is. You have a white man that's president. He's doing good things for the American people, and it consists of black people, and that's the problem. Because you can't have someone doing positive things because it's just their mindset is just completely twisted. And talking about another person's mind is just pretty much gone now, Joe Biden. Joe Biden, I mean, good for him for, you know, trying. As old as he is, good for him. Kudos. But you know what? He needs to go off to the pasture. I mean, not to say anything bad about him, but he's done.
Well, I think the Democrats wanted him in. I'm not sure how badly he wanted to get in. I don't think he can make it to November. And they can put out as many fake polls saying he's in the lead as they want. I don't think, physically, I don't think he can make it. Mentally, I don't think he can make it till November. So they're going to have to take a different candidate. There's no way, to me, it could be Biden. I mean, can you imagine 4 years?
Ooh, of this? Well, you know what? Maybe he can get 720 million women to vote for him.
Well, yeah, you got to bring them across the southern border first.
Yeah.
And they're actually middle-aged men, but hey, whatever.
Exactly. Let's play that clip real quick about Biden getting all of these votes.
You get a tax break for a racehorse. Why in God's name couldn't we provide an $8,000 tax credit for everybody who has child care costs? It would put 720 million women back in the workforce. It would increase the GDP to sound like a wonk here by about 0.8%. It would grow the economy.
Then no one will be questioning. You know, if you said 720,000 women, maybe then you know, maybe okay, or you know, 7,500 women, you know, that'd be understandable. But I think he's already hit his peak and he's on his way back down.
My favorite part of that clip, and it was right there at the end. He goes, and not to sound like a policy wonk, but 720 million—that's the best policy wonk I've ever heard in my life.
Well, and what's the deal with it? It's like just more tax dollars. Pay for this, pay for that, pay for 720 million women's child care costs. I mean, where does it stop? When do I have to stop paying for everybody's problems? I got enough problems of my own.
Yeah, exactly.
My own income gets taxed four times before I'm consuming whatever at the end of it. I mean, it's ridiculous.
100%. And you know what? I think that is a part of the model of the Democrats. Make everybody suffer. Everybody suffer. Even the poor are suffering. That's okay with the poor to suffer, but then they want the rich to suffer as well. You know, one of the things I said to a lot of the Democrats when I'm out in these different rallies and they're talking about, you know, you need to take from the rich and give to the poor. And I asked them, say, how many times have you known for a poor person to hire someone to do a job? And they kind of look at me and it goes over their head. And like, they don't understand it.
Yeah, it's like, what do you think makes the economy go? Like, you have this whole thing where they complain about, you know, yachts or something, right? Well, somebody has to build those yachts. Somebody has to design, engineer, build the engine. I mean, there's a lot of work. That fuels the economy. So you can hate that rich guy on that yacht as much as you want. You can be jealous. You can wish that was you on the yacht. But guess what? That guy that just bought that yacht probably employed 100 people along the way.
Yeah. And see, the nice thing about tax cuts, the way I see it, is that once you have a business and you get a tax cut, that means most people that are in business, they want to make more money, so they hire more people to help them make more money. And if you have the tax cut, you have the money. But, you know, the Democrats, they have this whole twisted idea on how they want humanity to run. So I have another clip before we go out to break that I want to play for you. This is with a senator slamming Google. All right, so let's go to this clip.
Yeah, my concern is that what we're seeing with Silicon Valley is they're creating jobs, but they're creating jobs in China. I mean, where are they prioritizing their investment? Overseas. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, look at Google. Google has worked overtime to try and open business ventures in China, including being willing to launch a platform search engines that censor according to Chinese communist government standards, just so that they can rake in the bucks. Where's everything produced that Apple, for instance, makes? China. So I'm concerned that they're building an economy in which American workers don't have anything to do. American workers don't benefit. Uber, I mentioned the Uber economy, because Uber drivers get paid cents on the dollar in order to drive. So who benefits from that? Uber executives, they get rich, just like Google executives are rich and Amazon executives are rich, Facebook. But what about everyday American workers? What's their place in this economy? It's a problem.
Do you think gig economy jobs make America a better or a worse place?
I mean, it just depends. They should be making America better. And this is my challenge to these companies. My challenge is, if they want to be leaders, you know, they say they represent the best of America. Well, if that's true, create jobs in this country. If that's true, invest in the middle of our society, in the middle of the country, but in the American middle, the middle class. Invest here, produce things here, create jobs and opportunities for our families, increase productivity. They haven't been doing any of that.
How is it that they are companies running inside of the United States? How is that possible?
You know, this is actually something that really bothers me, because this is at the heart and the root of so many issues in this country. It really is, and it's not properly covered. I come from St. Louis that used to have huge manufacturing districts all shut down when the jobs got sent to China. All these people, you go look at the streets of L.A. or Austin, or heck, it's not as bad in St. Louis, but there's homeless in every inner city. They would be working in the factories. Those would be the people in the factories churning out product, working for a wage that can pay for a family and a home. Those are all gone. It all got shipped to China. Well, people say, well, you know, they're drug addicts. They're mentally ill. They're out on the streets. That's because they don't have a job. That's because they have nothing to do. If they had an opportunity to work and make money and have a family and some property and a vehicle of their own, they wouldn't be drugged out on the streets. They would be working. And so I just think it's an issue that we never address. We want to throw more money at all the issues. We want to tax Americans to death. We don't hit the heart of the issue. Let's manufacture goods. Let's produce goods. Let's put people back to work. People want to work. They want to make money.
Yeah. But the Democrats, ALC, oh, you don't have to work. We're going to give you money.
Ilhan Omar said the same thing.
Yeah, it's crazy. Really quick, you want to say something before we go out to break?
No, it's entirely right. And it's the exact reason why we have a suicide epidemic, a depression epidemic, a drug epidemic, every epidemic you can think of, because these people, this massive human capital, is being wasted and destroyed because they're not working, because China's got the jobs.
Yeah, exactly. You know, speaking of AOC, nutty as she is, she's the leader of the Democrat Party. Nancy Pelosi is just a figurehead. And we're going to come back and we're going to show some videos with AOC and how exactly nutty she really is. All right, this is firepowernews.com. We'll be back after this. Go to band.video. Band.video. FirePowerNews.com. Tom Pepper is still in the studio with us. Great honor and pleasure to have Owen with us. Tom, AOC, the real leader of the Democrat Party.
That's right.
You know, that's the way I see her. The Democrats, they try to say, no, it's Nancy Pelosi. But, you know, she's like, young as she is, she's lost her mind already. And you still have Joe Biden. He's lost his mind. But, you know, everyone is looking at them for the positive things of the Democrat Party, or the way the Democrat Party should be led.
Well, you know, I find it very interesting. Nancy Pelosi keeps having these one-on-one meetings with AOC. The Democratic Speaker of the House does not meet with the freshman representative unless they have some power. So I know we've got lots of clips, but I just want to explain for a second.
Go ahead.
Our next guest, Peter DeBrasca, he's a candidate for House of Representatives in North Carolina's 7th District, and he could very easily be having arguments with AOC a year and a half from now. He's actually written the definitive unauthorized biography on AOC, so we thought that we would show some of her craziest moments for you folks at home.
Yeah, this be good. So let's go with that clip, the first one in our list.
In my 34 years, I've never seen such hate toward a law enforcement agency in my life that you want to abolish them rather doing your job and legislate. If they don't like it, legislate. You can't.
Mr. Holman, according to the rules of this committee,
of enacting laws. ICE doesn't put their heart on a shelf when they wear the badge and gun and all of a sudden they don't care about humanity. It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous false narrative, and I'm going to be here to the day I die to defend the men and women of the Border Patrol and ICE who put it online every day for this country.
Thank you.
Protected. I'd also like to apologize to you both for the behavior of some of the members of this committee where they are speaking in profoundly dehumanizing terms to you, and you don't deserve that. I'd like to apologize to you on behalf of the United States of America.
Would you like to address, and would you please address any of the...
Yeah, I want to address the last comments made about me being appalling. And first of all, I served my country for 34 years. I saved many lives, and I ran an agency. Let's be frank on what ICE does. ICE... last year, took a season of opioids off the streets of this country that could have killed every man, woman, and child in the United States twice. They've arrested thousands of sexual predators that preyed on children. They rescued thousands of children who were victims of predators. They arrested hundreds of women who were victims of sex trafficking. I am proud of the agency in ICE. And what we don't want to talk about is nearly 90% of everybody ICE arrests for immigration violations either have a criminal history or are pending criminal charges when they were found. I mean, they were found in a county jail, which most likely means they weren't a choir boy. So to mismeasures what the work the men and women of ICE do is, I find appalling that a member of Congress would throw that out there like that. In my 34 years, I've never seen such hate toward a law enforcement agency in my life that you want to abolish them rather doing your job and legislate.
Mr. Holman, your time
is expired. If they don't like it, legislate. You can't.
Mr. Holman, according to the rules of this committee,
of enacting laws.
Mr. Holman, your time is expired.
Her time needs to expire. I mean, seriously.
Zero tolerance was interpreted as the policy that separated children.
Terrible.
From
I don't know how people can stand her. And for Thomas Homan, who is the former director of ICE, and I think he may be going back there in some capacity. He's going to be President Trump's border czar, from my understanding. I cannot imagine how frustrating it must be for him to deal with somebody like this 29-year-old know-nothing who thinks everything should be free. And he spent, as you said, 32 years serving this country in one form or another.
Yeah. So we have another video that, if you can go ahead and cue that up, where she's left speechless. He just rips her a new one with factual information. And it's like going in one ear and out the other. It's almost like she has marbles bouncing around in the head. And, you know, and the ones she have, you know, it's like it's just... It's just amazing. So let's go to this next clip.
Zero tolerance was interpreted as the policy that separated children from their...
If I get arrested for DUI and I have a young child in a car, I'm going to be separated. When I was a police officer in New York and I arrested a father for domestic violence, I separated that
father from his family. Mr. Holman, with all due respect, legal asylees are not charged with any crime.
When you're in the country illegally, it's violation 8 United States Code 1325.
Seeking asylum is legal.
If you want to seek asylum, you go through the port of entry, do it the legal way. The Attorney General of the United States has made that clear.
Okay. And we found a memo. Dates back to April 23rd of 2018, where there was an official recommendation to, quote, pursue prosecution of all amenable adults who cross our border, quote, illegally, even though this applied to legal asylum seekers in practice, including those presenting with a family unit between ports of entry in coordination with DOJ. Here is the memo that I would like to submit to the congressional record.
What is the date of that?
It is the memorandum for the secretary from Homeland Security.
Date?
April 23rd, 2018, subject increasing prosecutions of immigration violations.
Without objection.
And so I looked at this memo, and it seems like this is the source of it. And it seems as though, Mr. Homan, that you are the author. It says here, from yourself, Kevin Mikkelinen, and Francis Cisna. Is this correct? Did you sign the memo?
I'd have to see what you...
I'd be happy to provide it.
He just lit in that big old gray.
And we'll provide it over. But
that's
I would like to note that here it says the official recommendation.
He's about to let
there were three different options presented. The third included the option for family separation. This initiative would pursue prosecution of
separating
all amenable
child
adults,
traffickers from their prey, is what he's talking about.
Exactly.
Mr. Homan, your name is on this. Is this correct?
Really good.
Yes, I signed that memo.
So you are the author of the family separation policy?
I am not the author of this memo.
You're not the author, but you signed the memo.
Yes, a zero tolerance memo.
So you provided the official recommendation to Secretary Nielsen on family for the United States to pursue family separation.
I gave Secretary Nielsen numerous recommendations on how to secure the border and save lives.
But it says here that you gave her numerous options, but the recommendation was option three, family separation.
What I'm saying, this is not the only paper where we've given the Secretary numerous options to secure the border and save lives.
And so the recommendation, of the many that you recommended family separation.
I recommended zero tolerance.
Which includes family separation.
The same as is whenever a U.S. citizen parent gets arrested when they're with a child.
Mm. Zero tolerance was interpreted as the policy that separated children from their...
If I get arrested for DUI and I have a young child in a car, I'm going to be separated. When I was a police officer in New York and I arrested a father for domestic violence, I separated that
Mr.
father
Holman,
from his family.
With all due respect, legal asylees are not charged with any crime.
She doesn't get it.
When you're in the country illegally, it's violation 8 United States Code 1325.
Seeking asylum is legal.
If you want to seek asylum, you go through the port of entry, do it the legal way. The Attorney General of the United States has made that clear.
I mean, see, it's in one ear and out the other. It's like, no, I don't want to hear the truth. This is what you need to go along with. This is the agenda that we're doing, and you're not playing along. You're not playing right. That is the problem. With them right now.
No, that's exactly right. And I mean, maybe we're expecting too much out of a bartender who is allegedly from Queens. I think our guest can tell us a little bit more about that. But what it comes down to is the fact that she has no respect for the rule of law. She wants to be the queen of all mankind, and her order is law, is gospel. And when you come up, it's so rare to see somebody actually stand up to AOC. And I think it's because they're all afraid of her Twitter, because, of course, Twitter boosts her up. But they're all afraid of her Twitter. So when you get somebody like Homan who goes up against her and essentially tells her the way the world works, it's such a refreshing thing to see.
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, he just let her have it. And it was like she understood what he was saying, but she was like, this is not the answer that I'm looking for. You're supposed to say, yes, we separate children because we're monsters.
Right.
Not that we're separating children from the monsters. You're the monster from separating them from monsters. You know what? It's just like in my opening monologue, what I say, that the Democrats are making everything that was once good now bad.
Mm.
And everything that was bad is now good for the Democrats. And a lot of people, it was like, what kind of world are we living in? The insanity of it all. And at some point, the American people say, you've got to say enough is enough. Stop it, stop it, stop it. AOCs, you need to go away. You need to go away. All right, we're back after this break.
Attention, American pigs. China is in control of your country now. We own Hollywood. We own your debt, and we owe Harvard and the Democratic Party. We have all your military courts, and we make 90% of your drugs, if we call that, and your vaccines. Oh, enjoy your cancer. Take your fentanyl and your tainted vaccines and your melamine and your baby formula we make for you and die. And don't fight back or the media will call you names and you don't want that. Shut up and do what we tell you. Shut up and die. And get rid of Trump and Alex Jones. You are not going to beat us.
Beautifully done. I don't think anyone can pull that off except for the man himself.
That's exactly right. I hope that turns into a series. That can't just be a one and done. It needs to be a series.
Yeah, we need to see more of those. I mean, you know, I mean, more, a lot more. Those are really good. So there was an accident at one of the Trump Towers, and there was apparently two people hurt in this accident. And they're not saying that it was deliberate, but, you know, I mean, what are the odds of someone taking their vehicle and going and hitting the Trump Tower?
Right.
I mean, what are the odds of that?
I mean, they're saying maybe they just lost control of the vehicle. It was an accident. These things happen. But at the same time, this is a guy who has been so completely demonized by his opponents, the media, social media, the Democrats, everybody, that it would not surprise me if a week or two go by and all of a sudden we hear just a little blip on the radar. Oh, yeah, by the way, that was a Trump derangement syndrome suffering individual who crashed into the Trump Plaza.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. But, you know, I have another clip that I'd rather get to right now because we're going to run out of time. And this is one with some cheerleaders. Displaying a Trump sign. So let's play this video with his cheerleaders and we're going to talk about it.
Their cheers are meant to unite the crowd, but now at North Stanley High School, the crowd is split. This after the school's cheerleaders posed with the Trump 2020 banner before a home football game this August. In a statement to NBC Charlotte, the Stanley County Board of Education said because the cheerleaders were in uniform and were acting as representatives of the school, the display of the sign could be perceived as the school or school system endorsing a political campaign, which they say is prohibited. The school district says the girls were not disciplined, simply asked not to do it again. But days later, the North Carolina High School Athletic Association placed the cheerleading squad on probation, telling the local newspaper that every contest should be conducted in a wholesome athletic environment, an environment where good sportsmanship is shown, where people feel safe, that respect for all people participating is being shown. And while some are cheering on that decision, others cheering on the cheerleaders.
We're only here to support them and their First Amendment rights.
Jeremy Onatrab says he's organizing a support rally in front of the school before Friday night's football game. So far, more than 800 people say they're interested in attending.
I'd love to line the street so that everybody going into the game goes through the biggest Trump rally they've ever been to. That would be phenomenal.
Wow, that's just something. You know what? I mean, the sitting president of the United States, they're showing support for. And you have leftist liberals that don't like it. This is disgusting. See, there it is again. The Democrats, they want to change what humanity is, on who you can even support. And if it's not on social media, you can't even do it in your own school, or you can't even do it out on the street. You can't even show support for the sitting president, the man that everybody elected in this country, or the one that won. I mean, we should be above and beyond this by now.
Well, what's really frustrating with that clip is they say that supporting President Trump could make people feel uncomfortable. Supporting the president may make people feel alienated. Isn't that bizarre?
Yeah. Leave the country. Leave the country. You don't have to worry about that. That's the solution. That is the solution. All right. We'll be back after this. Firepowernews.com. We'll be right back.
with Will Johnson.
All right, welcome back, FirePowerNews.com. Go to band.video, band.video, band.video. All right, we have another guest coming on. This is a close friend of Tom Peppert. We'll go ahead and let you introduce him.
All right. So we have joining us now Pete DeBrasca. Pete is a journalist. He's been writing for several years now. He has two books that have both been published. And he is now running for the House of Representatives in North Carolina's 7th District. Peter DeBrasca, are you with us, sir?
I am, Tom and Will. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for coming on the show. So now we were showing some clips of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who, of course, you are the bona fide expert on her. You've written the unauthorized biography on the lovely AOC, if I understand correctly. So tell us a little bit about what you learned about AOC and then what you will be, assuming you are elected, what will you do to contrast that lovely, lovely lady?
Yeah, well, so, you know, the main sort of theme of the book, and what I learned about AOC when I went to New York and really dug into her childhood and where she says she grew up and how she says she grew up. The whole thing is sort of a campaign fabrication of sorts. And it's, you know, it's not unlike what a lot of candidates do, I suppose, except for the fact that you don't really understand the breadth of how far she exaggerated until you go there and realize that, like, she didn't grow up anywhere near New York City, and instead she grew up in this, you know, ethnically homogenous sort of upper middle class white suburb where everybody called her Sandy. And, you know, she didn't experience any of this so-called diversity that she's always preaching about. And as far as I could find out, you know, never sort of struggled like her constituents do in the Bronx. And to be honest with you, you know, the other interesting thing was, I couldn't even verify whether she lived in the Bronx after her graduation from college. So, you know, she left the Bronx, which was really upstate New York, or which was really, you know, outside of New York City, in upper middle class suburb, to go to Boston University. And then she supposedly came back and lived in the Parkchester Bronx flat where her father, which her father owned and had given to her. But there was no evidence that anybody could find of that other than a voter registration. New York Post did a big expose on that, where they basically staked the place out and couldn't find any evidence that she even lived there. Her neighbors didn't know her and so forth. So the whole sort of backstory is kind of a lie. That was really the main thing. It was really what I learned.
Well, so real quick, before you answer my second question, and I apologize, it's very poor form, but I just, you have a specific anecdote from when you went to her stomping grounds and you went to a Starbucks or a cafe and you just happened to ask somebody if they knew Alexandria or Sandy. And can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So she's very well known in the town, obviously. I mean, she's the most famous person that's ever come from Yorktown Heights. So I was in the Starbucks there before I went to visit the house that she grew up in. And I was waiting for my coffee, and there was like a youngish girl, probably around my age, maybe 25 or something. And I said, hey, like, you know, you obviously know AOC's from here. I said, can you tell me about the overall sentiment about AOC in this town? And without missing a beat, this girl looked at me and she said, well, AOC is just as white as the rest of us. And it was like a really like telling moment, you know, like, I mean, it was not a rehearsed answer. It was just off the top of her head. Like that was it was as if she was trying to convey to me, this chick is not who she says she is. Right.
Right. So Pete, you are running in North Carolina's 7th district, and this kind of hit me, it blindsided me. We used to be colleagues, and all of a sudden you're running for Congress. Can you tell us a little bit about your campaign, what motivated it, and what you hope to achieve?
Sure, yeah. So I'm really sort of, and you know, like you said, we go back, so you understand that I kind of have I sort of loathe the political establishment, both left and right. I'm not a big fan of the GOP at all. In fact, I would consider myself to be more of a populist than a conservative as it's defined today. You know, I'm more of a Tucker Carlson Republican, I would say, than anything. And so, you know, I live in a district where there is a current GOP incumbent. His name's David Rouser. He's the chairman of the House Anonymous Caucus, because you've never heard of him, and neither has anybody else. He's just one of these guys that goes up there and collects a paycheck and never does any fighting on behalf of, like, ordinary people or what we stand for. And honestly, the trigger, what sent me over the edge, was the whole discussion on red flag laws. So we have these people in now in the GOP, not just on the political left, seriously considering implementing red flag laws. And I can't think of anything that is a bigger infringement on your Second Amendment and your due process rights. And I'm looking at the GOP in North Carolina and going, is anybody going to stand up for our rights here? And they're all dead silent except for our esteemed Senator Tom Tillis, who is pro red flag laws. So I said, you know, maybe I'll throw my hat in the ring and I'll see what happens. And this is a district in North Carolina 7 that has a history of grassroots organization for right leaning candidates. And David Rouser was very narrowly, 2014 almost primary, won by 5,700 votes. So there's a real opportunity here to make a difference at the primary level and to be sort of the conservative answer to AOC, you know, if you will.
I love it. Because you are, I think you're about the same age. So, Pete, you promised something when you announced that personally, and at least a third of the country, I think, agree with you with. Can you tell us about what you want to do as it relates to immigration?
Yeah. So my number one issue, and so guns are number two, and I'm glad we talked about that because it's very important. You see, I've got the 3% fly behind me here. I'm a big fan. So, but my number one issue is immigration. I really believe that immigration is the issue that relates to all of the other issues that we have in this country. So, my plan, and I am the first federal congressional candidate to propose a plan like this, as far as I know, is to put a total moratorium on all immigration, legal and illegal, for a period of 10 years, while we can establish a system of immigration that works on behalf of the American people. So the analogy that I like to use is, when the bathtub is overflowing, you don't stop and think about, you know, how am I going to clean up this mess? Am I going to use a mop or a squeegee? Or, you know, am I going to have to get 100 towels or 15 towels? What you do is you turn off the bath water, right? So the first thing that we're going to do when I'm elected to Congress is turn off the bath water. And I'm going to go there, frankly, Tom, and raise hell until the rest of the GOP gets on board with closing the borders, as they've all promised to do but failed to deliver on.
I love it. I love it. Well, I don't mean to bogart our guest, Will.
No, you're good. You're good. I love it. I'm loving it. I'm actually learning more about him. I mean, he's a close friend of yours. So, I mean, obviously, let me ask you a question. Sure. Why do you think we have the GOP, and there's many in the GOP, that's starting to support the red flag laws the way they are? Because we all know that the base, President Trump's base, is not going to go with it.
Yeah, that's a great question, right? And it's pretty incredible. And I think, Will, what it comes down to is just a lack of spine, honestly. Mm. So, you know, I think about this a lot. There's ample reason why the GOP establishment would support open borders the way they do, right? Cheap labor being the number one reason. Because, you know, they're lobbied by big businesses whose bottom lines are affected by the cost of labor, right? So if they can import illegal immigrants from the third world to work for cheaper, then that's better than hiring Americans. So that's why the GOP has dragged its feet on closing the borders. But for guns, there's no reason why they would ever go along with any leftist plan for gun control, other than the fact that, you know, they don't have any spine, or they lack the willingness to face the criticism from the media if they stand up for the Second Amendment. So it's time for us to say, no, we will not accept your premise. We will not have red flag laws, and go on offense for once on guns instead of being on defense.
Yeah. Okay, well, hey, we're going to talk more after the break. We have more questions for Mr. Pete running in North Carolina, right? For the House. All right, for the 7th District. All right, we'll be right back. This is FirePowerNews.com.
Look at all our beats.
All right, welcome back. Firepowernews.com. Go to band.video. Share the video out right now. Band.video. Go to band.video. Share it out. Share it out. All right, we have our guests on with us. Pete DeBrosca running for House in North Carolina. So let's go ahead and bring Pete back on. And I think Tom Peppert has some more questions.
Absolutely. So, Pete, you wrote another book in addition to the unauthorized biography of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Can you tell us about this other book? Because, look, okay, before we even get into that, you know that you are going to be called a bigot, a racist, a xenophobe, probably a homophobe for reasons that I don't understand. So you know all this because you wrote this book. So tell us about the other book you did.
So I wrote a book called Enemies, the Oppressors, the American People. It's right here. It's available at every major bookseller in America. It's an entire book about how awful the mainstream press is and how deceptive and how sort of agenda-driven and biased they are. So there's a ton. I mean, there's years worth of mainstream press lies in that book debunked. And just, you know, foolish follies and things they've done to try and get Trump and how they sort of view their job as an opportunity to take down the president and not to cover his office fairly. And you know, the entire book is sort of a defense of President Trump calling the press the enemy because they are his enemy. And in fact, they're not really his enemy. They're the enemy of the American people, right? Trump can take on the press. He can handle the bad press. He's shown that. He is just standing between the press and the American people, right? They, when they attack him, by extension, they're attacking us, the people who support him. Right. And so that was one of the reasons why I was motivated to write the book. It's very much, again, you know, sort of populist-driven for the common man by the common man.
So, Peter, I mean, you understand that with the position you are taking to put a moratorium on all immigration, legal or illegal, H-1B visas, all of it, that you will become the enemy of the media. So what are you going to do when you've got CNN knocking on your door, parked outside your house? I mean, hopefully the FBI doesn't raid you, but what is your plan here?
Well, first of all, I've got some stats on that, Tom, and I do want to talk about this because I think it's important that people know just exactly what the problem is, okay? So right now, we have 1.2 million illegal border crossings per year. We have 250,000 chain migrants in the United States, and these are people who are relatives of legal immigrants who get to come here just because one of their relatives is a legal immigrant. So what we're doing is we're importing, you know, entire third world villages of people who are illiterate in their own languages, never mind ours, right, via chain migration. Terrible policy, needs to go. We have 300,000 anchor babies born in America every year. We have 85,000 H-1B visas. That's for tech. So more than 70% of tech workers in Silicon Valley are foreign. They're not, say, I mean, American universities are just not pumping out like software engineers, for example.
Well, and I mean, the other part of this, Peter, that I know you know, is you bring somebody in on an H-1 visa, and they essentially, if they're working at Twitter, they are Twitter's serf. They're not allowed to go to work anywhere else, or else they have to go back to their country of origin, apply for another visa, and then go work over there. So they're essentially an indentured servant. Am I correct?
No, you're absolutely right. And this is like what the elite does, right? It brings in a peasant class to serve its interests, right? I mean, that's what they're doing. And, you know, it speaks ill of, and I, by the way, with the H-1B visas, there's also a big lobby in academia on behalf of the H-1B visas because academia knows that it's not producing enough quality software engineers. In order to fill the positions that the software that the companies like Twitter need, right? And if we were to end H-1B visas, that like glaring gap in higher education would be exposed. So they love H-1B visas too because it keeps the public from understanding that they're not doing their jobs in teaching people and preparing them for life in the 21st century, right? We have 220,000 H-2A visas. That's agricultural visas. So that's you're picking vegetables, which is the argument that a lot of people give, oh, Americans won't pick vegetables. Like, they will if they have to, we have 33,000 H-2B visas. Those are temp ag workers. I say temp in quotations because they always stay. after their visas are expired. Which brings me to my next point. We have 600,000 visa overstays every year in America, so more than 500,000 illegal immigrants coming in that way. And there are almost 1 million DACA recipients in America, and you know, likely 1 million more who have not actually sort of signed up to be part of the program. This is what we're facing. And so media be damned, you can call me whatever you want. If our country wants to survive, literally, if we want to leave a nation to our posterity, it is imperative that we stop the influx of illegal immigrants coming across the border. So you may remember, you know, it's a month and a half ago, 2 months now, there were some ICE protesters, anti-ICE protesters outside of a facility in Aurora, Colorado, who actually lowered the American flag and they raised a Mexican flag in its place. What do you think? I mean, what do we think as a country an invasion looks like? Right? Well, I mean, we have countless instances now of illegal aliens raping our children. Right? They're draining $116 billion from our economy every single year in taxpayer money, according to FAIR, the immigration organization.
Right.
What do you think an invasion looks like? Invasion is the term to use. And the media can say whatever they want. They can say it's inflammatory. They can say it's over the top. They can say it's harsh. They can say it incites violence. I don't care. It's the correct term, and I'm going to use it. We are being invaded by foreign nationals.
It's definitely a brave stance to take. Will, I'll turn it over to you.
Have you got any flack from the local media there? All right, how have they responded to you?
So it's been interesting with the local media, right? The local media is largely liberal, like all media is. Mm-hmm. And so they're actually excited at the prospects, the chance of being able to ding up the incumbent Republican, right? So we've kind of got like an enemy's enemy situation on our hands here, where like they might not particularly like me, but they definitely don't like David Rauser. And so the local media has been really kind to me, actually. They've propped me up, you know, more than that. The only, you know, relatively negative thing that's been said about me in the media so far, and I'm kind of disappointed by this. I don't think the media is doing a very good job, honestly.
That brings me to another question. So how is the local GOP treating you? I mean...
And that's a good question, too. But it's, you know, it's the same story that we have over and over and over with the GOP is, like, what GOP? You know, I went to a county GOP, and this is a county that has probably 1 million people in it or so. I went to a county GOP meeting 2 weeks ago to watch President Trump speak at a rally in Fayetteville. It was, you know, 2 hours from here, the night before Dan Bishop and Greg Murphy got elected to Congress. And there were 7 people that showed up to this meeting. The GOP is non-existent, right?
Wow, so, that's crazy. Hey, yeah. hold the rest of that thought. We're going to talk more about it after this break. Because I really want to hear what you have to say about the local GOP and 7 people. That means seriously? Sound like a Hillary Clinton rally. I mean, all right, we'll be right back after this. Firepowernews.com, band.video.
People, real politics. This is Firepower.
All right, welcome back. Will Johnson, Tom Pepper. We have our special guest, Pete DeBrusca, running for House in North Carolina as our special guest right now. Pete, right before we went to the break, you were talking about the local GOP and how they're interacting with you. I've talked to other people that's running for political office. Like I know a young lady in California. She's running for governor for the state for the city of San Francisco, and the GOP there basically won't give her any attention. It's like they want to deliberately lose. So, what is the atmosphere like where you are?
Yeah, and so you know, it really is amazing to me that. Particularly in San Francisco, where you know the whole city's Democrat controlled, that they wouldn't want to at least put up a fight. I understand that fight, you know, might be futile, and maybe their reasoning is hey, we're going to lose anyway, so why spend the money? But I think that that's sort of an indication of how the GOP behaves as a whole, which is just to roll over and die in the face of adversity, right? Which is not an ethos. It's just, it's spinelessness. It's weakness. I mean, that's what we have as a party. In terms of the GOP here, I mean, I don't expect any of the county GOPs in North Carolina's 7th district to endorse me or David Rouser, my opponent, because, you know, it's just generally their policy is not to endorse primary candidates. But I would expect that in a county that has more than, that has 227,000 people in it, and in a district that has more than a million people in it, you'd be able to get more than 7 people to show up to a meeting. Mm. It really shows how pathetic the Republican GOP ground game is, right? We always talk about this. Democrats go out and knock on doors and they get organized at the grassroots level and they have volunteers and locals out handing out flyers and, you know, wearing t-shirts and putting yard signs up and so on and so forth. The GOP just sits on its rear and expects, I suppose, that somebody is going to come out and vote for them on election day. That's not how it works. That is why our party is filled with these sort of corporate shills who are beholden to lobbyism and Wall Street and any of the other major industries that you can think of, instead of actually putting up grassroots candidates who, you know, are just normal people who are in this to, you know, sort of better the lives, improve the lives of ordinary Americans, which is, you know, what I would like to do.
Yeah, I think you hit on something there. The people inside the GOP expect someone else to do something. And that's exactly, you know, that I've seen that across the board. They, you know, and what happens a lot, and I scream about it, even though we had President Trump win in 2016, a lot of people got lax and think, okay, well, we have President Trump now. We don't have to do anything. We don't have to go out to the different rallies and support the people at your local level, because we have President Trump. And a lot of times when they elect these officials, then they're like, okay, I can go sit back on the couch because we elected someone we want. They're going to do the job we expect. But that's not the case. That doesn't happen. You know, I think we, the people, we need to keep putting a fire up under them to get them to keep going. You know, yeah. And from what I hear nothing but good things about you from Tom. So I don't, you know, and the GOP, they don't like it when someone comes in and actually going to do their job. For example, they don't like President Trump, really. I mean, it's a prime example because President Trump is doing his job. And yeah. He has the GOP, he has the liberal media, the DNC, he has all of them that he's fighting against. And I can imagine that you're going to run up against the same block. Let me ask you another question. So you have a campaign manager?
I don't, no.
Okay. Well, so I've talked to other people that are campaign manager, and they're afraid of going on different platforms, anything that's even tied with Alex Jones. And when they see, you know, Alex Jones there, they're scared because they're like, well, they, why are you going on there? And because they're afraid that it's going to be used against them as if we're not even on the same planet. I mean, at that point, you can say, well, you live on the same planet, so what's your excuse?
Right. So, look, nothing could be more foolish than, you know, denying a network like InfoWars, which literally is, as far as I'm concerned, has its pulse on the hands of the people closer than any other news network in America, right? I mean, the audience of InfoWars is ordinary Americans. It's like, who are you trying to get to come, you know, vote for you or to hear your message? It's ordinary Americans. And so, yeah, I mean, people were freaked out when Trump did that, the InfoWars interview. I thought it was awesome. I watched that from my office when I was working a day job, and I was like giddy about it, right? Because I knew he was reaching at that time just millions of ordinary people who were going to vote for him, more than he could possibly reach on any cable news show in prime time on any network, right? So this idea that, you know, and so this is something we do in independent media a lot, and Tom has been great at working on this too, and we're chipping away. It's, we've sort of, you know, all of us have gotten together and proven to, you know, the sort of establishment media that they're a bunch of clowns and that they're not really experts on anything, and that everybody today is a journalist. I mean, everybody has a cell phone and everybody has a camera on that cell phone. Yeah. And all you have to do is tell the truth. I mean, that's like pretty much the basic premise. And since the mainstream press abjectly fails to do that all the time, then it's really opened up a big opportunity for people like us who can now document things on our cell phones and tell the truth about them. And that's why you see the rise in independent media. So yeah, it's foolish that, you know, some campaign idiots would say like, hey, don't go on this network. Like consultants, generally speaking, I think are probably the most useless people in politics. And we have some consultant friends, so sorry when you watch this interview, but like, but like Trump didn't hire barely any consultants. I mean, Steve Bannon was just like his guy, and Bannon obviously, you know, is a Breitbart guy, and so he knew what the ordinary American right. wanted. And I think that was part of the reason why, you know, he had so much success, because he wasn't listening to like the think tank types in D.C., you know, the people who are running the traditional GOP campaign.
Right. So, Peter, I want to go back to kind of your history for just a second, because you are, it's a fascinating example of what a populist Republican looks like, because just for a quick rundown, then we'll get to that here in a second as well, Peter. But so you started out as a law student. You decided that you didn't want to become one of the blazer-wearing GOPE people, even though now we're both forced to wear blazers. I guess that's okay. So you ditched that crowd. You started work in independent conservative media. And just kind of explain how this has formed your ethos, what your beat was, and how this has led you down this path.
Yeah, so really what happened, Tom, is that in 2015 and in going into early 2016, I was working in software sales, and I was like 24 at the time. And I was not interested at all in doing software sales, but I became very interested in doing politics when I decided that for the 2016 election, I wanted to be civically engaged and understand what was going on in the world. And that was, you know, I always had this sort of latent conservatism in me because, you know, I grew up in a blue collar household, but I had never sort of, you know, delved into politics until late 2015, early 2016. And right away, I was wholly unimpressed. I distinctly remember this. I was wholly unimpressed with the punditry class, with the commentariat, with the experts, with the think tank people, with like all these people who we're supposed to look up to in DC. Like, these people are clowns and they're wrong about everything. Like, why are we listening to them? None of them like seem to know anything about like the ordinary American. None of them have probably ever sat down and talked to, you know, the trucker who lives in Idaho or like, you know, the coal miner in West Virginia. These people are just clowns, right? And so I said to myself, like, if these people can do it, so can I. And I started looking at people I looked up to in media, like Ann Coulter is a big influence for me. And she has a law degree. And so I said, okay, I'll go to law school with the intent of becoming a political journalist. And so I went to law school, and after my first year there, that's when our previous employer really started to blow up. And by the time I was done with the first year of law school, I had accomplished my goal. I mean, that's how I got it.
Well, hey, Pete, we're going to take a hard break here. We're going to talk more with you on the other side of this. Go to band.video, everyone. Share this. Help Pete out. North Carolina, House, the House. Vote them out. We'll be back. All right, we're back. We have Pete DeBrusca running for the House in North Carolina. We have Tom Peppert in studio with us. My name is Will Johnson. This is Firepower. One question that I like to ask Pete is, do you have any campaign rallies coming up? Do you have any events that you would like people to know about and how they can come out and support you?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that. And so we don't have anything scheduled right now. We're still in the early stages of getting sort of the grassroots organizers together. And this is an interesting point. There was a great candidate in North Carolina 7 in 2010 and 2012. His name was Ilario Pantano. And Ilario was a fascinating candidate, and everybody here loved him. The entire sort of grassroots Tea Party organizers, they all went to bat for him, and they worked tirelessly for him. And at that point, this was a blue district, and it got redistricted later. But they worked hard and did their best. And Ilario eventually got screwed, essentially, by the GOP establishment and by the Democrats because he was too much of a sort of grassroots candidate to go to Washington. So the people in this district, the grassroots organizers, got very discouraged, as they would naturally. And I've been working with a lot of those people and trying to get them to sort of get the band back together. But this is the effect of a party that actively keeps outsider candidates outside. So it has been difficult to organize and to rally. I am working on organizing a pro-ICE rally, though, with some of my friends here. There's one guy named Mark Robinson, who you guys might know. I was running for lieutenant governor. He was the guy who did the viral video in front of the Greensboro City Council about making sure they didn't take away his gun rights and being a law-abiding citizen. So, you know, we've got some irons in the fire, and I do think that we will be able to organize and get some events together. And look, I don't care if it's five people in a parking lot or a coffee shop or somebody's dining room. I want to get out and meet people. I want to talk to people. I want to figure out what's important to them and make sure that we address their concerns as American citizens.
Well, cool. Well, when you do have one, I mean, by all means, come back on with Tom and myself and talk about it, and we'll help you get the word out.
Absolutely. And Pete, so we've talked about your books, we've kind of talked about your history, but some folks probably don't know that you are still a journalist. That is your 9-to-5 day job. Can you tell us a little bit about where people can, first of all, connect with you, second of all, read your work, watch your live streams, that type of thing?
Sure, yeah. So definitely go to PeteForNC.com. It's my campaign website. Contribute anything you can. It would be greatly appreciated. $5, $10, whatever it is that you feel is appropriate to donate to somebody who is genuinely interested in helping out the ordinary American and who is, frankly, an ordinary American. So yeah, go to pfrancy.com. I also do run my own news publication now. It's called The Rundown News. You can find it at therundownnews.com. It has slowed down a little bit since we started campaigning, you know, naturally, right? We've got a million things going on trying to get the campaign up and running. But it is, I mean, I do expect it to be pretty much a powerhouse going forward, you know, in conservative journalism. We're basically the former sort of smaller grassroots type, you know, publications that were once conservative go-tos have been absorbed by the establishment media, right? So we have to continue to produce our own independent media. And that's what I know you're doing, Tom, at National File. That's what InfoWars has always done. And we're grateful to InfoWars for that. You guys have never sold out to corporate media. And I think that's awesome. And that's, you know, hopefully what we're going to do at The Rundown too.
Let me ask you, have you seen any censorship on your Twitter account being a Republican running for the House?
Not during my campaign, but I was once banned from Twitter. And then I, permanently suspended. And then we actually had to physically go to the Twitter office in Washington, D.C. and talk to them and say, hey, look, like, I mean, I'm a reporter. I need this for my job. And that actually worked. Surprisingly, they reinstated my account. I beat all the charges. But there was a period of time where I was banned totally, you know, like all the other folks that they've sort of sent to the permanent gulag.
Interesting. Yeah. To my understanding, once you're running for political office, they have to allow you on the platform. To my understanding.
You would imagine. I mean, how would it not be election meddling or interference to ban somebody while they're running? I mean, which is like, you know, and this is like big tech's focus now. They're working with the feds supposedly to like combat election meddling and fake news and misinformation in 2020. Like, does anybody really think that's a good idea, or do you think that they're going to use that power against conservatives? Because it seems to me that like it's more likely that the latter is going to happen. I mean, these people are the election meddlers. Like, they're the ones stopping conservatives from getting their message out. So
that is exactly right. So, Pete, we've had some serious questions. We've talked about everything from AOC to the media to wanting to put a 10-year moratorium on all immigration, legal, illegal, H-1B, whatever it may be. Let's have we've also talked about some of your differences between yourself and the GOPE, the GOP establishment. So I've got to ask this question, and it's something that is quite controversial. President Trump and his administration recently threw out the idea of banning flavored vapes. Where do you stand on this, Mr. DeBrasca?
I am. So here, actually, let me tell you what I really think of the vape ban. I think the vape ban is great politics. Okay. It's great politics for this reason. Trump is President Trump is hurting, at least they say, with suburban moms, right? So but seriously, right? So what's a good way to bolster your numbers among suburban moms? You go to the thing that's worrying them the most, which is like, my kid is using this stupid vape, right? So it's great politics. It's overall, it's terrible policy, right? Like, you know, banning something is not going to make it go away. We all know that. And you know, obviously, like, well, what's your alternative? Cigarettes? Like, you're really? So they're going to ban the vapes and make us? It's terrible policy, but it's great politics on behalf of Trump. And I think he's smarter than we give him credit for in a lot of these type of things. You know.
Oh, cool. Well, hey, I want to thank you for coming on with us. It's been a great pleasure. Tell everyone how you know about your book one more time, and how they can contact with you and support your campaign.
Sure, yeah. I would just say go to PeteForNC.com, check out my campaign website, and I want to end on just a message for the GOP establishment and for, you know, all of the formerly reliable publications that we used to read, and for all the nerds, the Heritage Foundation, think tanks. You can keep doing what you're doing. That's all well and good. You know, keep typing into your WordPresses and keep having your dumb Wednesday policy meetings, but stay out of our way. Okay, there's a new nationalist, populist GOP. We don't need you. Get out of our way. Stop hindering us. And that's how I want to end this interview.
Awesome. Awesome. Good deal. I would imagine that, you know, you're probably been called racist.
Yeah.
Have you been called that already, running GOP?
Yeah, but like, I'm immune to it, dude. I'm half an Arab, like I'm half Syrian. And I just, and honestly, dude, I just
And they still
don't care.
Call you racist.
Yeah. I just, like, call me whatever you want, man. Like, we're going to save the country, you know? Like, I really don't care.
Yeah, it's amazing. So, hey, I want to thank you for coming on with us. You got any more last questions for him before he goes?
No, but Peter, I want to say thank you again. And I think that the country will likely be in your debt if you manage to get elected and if you manage to pull this off. But one more time, so it's PeteForNC.com. What is your Twitter handle? And then give us your news website one more time.
Sure. So it's PeteForNC, F-O-R, not the number four, but F-O-R. Twitter handle is PDabrosca, P-D-A-B-R-O-S-C-A. And you can find my journalism work at therundownnews.com. So check me out there. And I definitely appreciate Will and Tom for you guys having me on tonight for an hour. It's been awesome. Really enjoyed it.
Awesome. Thanks again. And don't forget, once you have your campaign, you get ready to hit your campaign rally, please come back on and let's talk about it, and we'll help you get the word out.
Will do. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, cool. Hey, very good. Very good. I like him a lot. So before we go, let me put this in here because a lot of people don't know. Turbo Force, okay, because we have to pay some bills here. Turbo Force, right now, if you go to InfoWarsStore.com, you can get Turbo Force for 50% off the retail price, plus shipping, okay? Free shipping. Free shipping. Turbo Force, if you go to InfoWarsStore.com, I'm going to leave on that note. If you never tried it with the orange juice, you've got to. Before Tom leaves, I'm going to get him some orange juice with the Turbo Force so he can have the orange juice Turbo Force experience.
I've got to try it.
Yeah, it's absolutely wonderful. So, hey, thank you for sponsoring. Thank you for, I want to say thank you for InfoWarsStore.com for being a wonderful sponsor. And I want to thank everybody for sharing the links. And thank you for watching. We'll see you tomorrow, God's willing. Good night. God bless.